Welcome. I'm James Evan Pilato from MediaMonarchy.com.
And I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're tuned into The New World Next Week at NewWorldNextWeek.com, where you can go for all of the audio and video file formats that this weekly news series is brought to you in. And once again, I'd just like to thank everyone for tuning in. I know we've been on hiatus for a couple of weeks while I've been busy attending to the birth of my new baby boy, so taking some time out to enjoy the great blessings in life. And so once again, thank you for tuning back in as we return to our regularly scheduled deprogramming. So James, why don't you take it away?
We will begin with Press TV and all the unbelievable news that's going on in Syria, as we'll at least set the stage with the unprovoked attack on Syria as Israel yet again commits egregious international crimes. Unprovoked, Israel has attacked Syria numerous times over the last couple of days, including attacks on the Syrian capital of Damascus in what appears to be a series of intentional provocations designed to drag the region into a wider conflict its U.S. sponsors can then enter militarily. Neither attacked directly by Syria nor able to cite credible evidence in regards to perceived threats, Israel claims to be reacting to. The assault on Syria represents a Chapter 7 breach in the United Nations Charter. So, James, the other story that was swirling around this and the main part that we want to kind of key in on here, I'll just take it from Mashable.com. As, of course, we note, anytime an army wants to go into a city, the first thing you do is you got to get those communications devices. I may be speculating, but let's check it out. The 19-hour internet outage in Syria finally ended. The outage began at approximately 3 p.m. Tuesday. That would have been May 7th, 2013. But essentially, internet connections in Syria coming back after a nearly day-long outage, again, starting at 3 p.m. Tuesday, sparking fears the country's military was preparing an assault against rebel forces following the Israeli airstrikes on Hezbollah-bound shipments of guided missiles in Damascus. On top of that, interruptions in Syrian internet service have in the past coincided with significant military operations in the country. Jumping down in the article, Syrian state media blamed the outage on a faulty cable, though experts indicated to the BBC that was unlikely. Dan Hubbard, chief tech officer at online security company called OpenDNS, speculated the outage might have been the result of government tampering. The internet, this cuts to the heart of it right here, James, the internet has essentially become a parallel theater of combat in the Syrian conflict. Anti-government rebels use it to coordinate, share news, and connect with the outside world. Hackers aligned with the Syrian government attack news outlets and other organizations they view as anti-government, often hijacking Twitter accounts to spread propaganda. So, James, the other bit that I found really interesting to this, coming from the artist formerly known as the Intel Hub, those guys, Shep and those gang, it's now the IntelliHub.com. Israel granted oil rights in Syria to the Murdoch and Rothschild Genie Energy 2 months ago. So when we learned that story from 2 months ago, that makes perhaps these seemingly unprovoked airstrikes perhaps come into view, James.
It certainly does. Things are definitely afoot in Syria, and it's a bit of a fog of war scenario right now where we can't say exactly what is happening or why or how and who's doing what, but we know that things are definitely changing on the ground there on a basically daily basis now, and it looks like we are coming, I know we've said this before, but it looks like we are coming into some sort of endgame scenario there as things really do start to heat up, and obviously the Israeli strikes in Damascus itself, just a huge escalation of what's going on there. And interesting that this is coming now, just a couple of weeks after Sibel Edmonds, of course, was on the Corbett Report talking about how the Boston bombing leads back to Dagestan and Chechnya and how that might play into a Syria situation and perhaps Russia making deals with Washington on Syria. And now we have John Kerry meeting with the Russian foreign minister and saying that there's, you know, room for deals to be made. And we have Israel doing this and we have the internet going down. So something's happening there, and I think we have to keep our eye on this quite closely right now. And I think Tony Cartolucci hits the nail on the head in his report on this, how basically Israel has just committed a major international war crime, aggression, violation of international standards. But of course, it's just going to be completely and utterly exempted from any criticism in the mainstream media. So we should be here to document it, and we will be. And of course, you can check the document, the show notes for this particular episode, where you can find all of the articles that we're talking about.
And speaking of those show notes, James, just a couple of other related notes on this first story that I think will segue into our other couple of stories this week. Stephen Hawking joins academic boycott of Israel, and they're, it looks like they're kind of spinning it in it's purely related to his health. However, Stephen Hawking would by no means be the first person to boycott Israel, and this is this sort of academic boycott of Israel, and you can get more on that from The Guardian. The other media synchronicity note, James, I found really interesting. I've been watching late at night. There's an original Netflix series directed by David Fincher called House of Cards. It's a U.S. version of a U.K. show. But in the middle of the episode, where basically a scorned congressman decides he's going to exact his revenge on everybody who wronged him and betrayed him in Washington, he basically just plants the seed of a story of the soon-to-be Secretary of State may have questioned the legitimacy of Israel. And as the scene plays out on the show, basically they have the real George Stephanopoulos talking to this Secretary of State. Oh, did you author this article back in college about saying, you know, the Palestinians and, you know, illegal occupation? And they love it. And that was the way in this show that they basically destroyed this Secretary of State, was just by dangling the possibility that perhaps he questioned the illegal occupation of Israel. And he's just, it's Machiavellian evil. He's, Kevin Spacey sits back and tenses his fingers, seeing the destruction he caused being even more successful than he thought it would be, just by touching that political third rail of Israel. James, our second story is something we pretty much spent the whole evening on earlier tonight on Ground Zero talking about, and that would be the re-education of Lauryn Hill. Now, I found it interesting just about a week and a half ago, April 25th, and we'll include all these links again. Lauryn Hill signed a five-song million-dollar deal with Sony to avoid prison. So I found that really, I was like, oh, wow, she's going to kind of come out and go, okay, I'll give you essentially an EP of songs, and that'll pay off my bills, and it'll be okay. But then today we see that Lauryn Hill has gotten 3 months in prison for failing to pay taxes. And even more so, James, we'll grab it from the IB Times. Reclusive soul singer Lauryn Hill has been jailed over an enormous unpaid tax bill. Fuji singer Hill, age 37, was sentenced to 3 months jail, followed by 3 months home confinement for failing to pay $500,000 to the tax man in the United States. Hill claimed the sum was outstanding because she had withdrawn from society after alleged threats against her family. She was imprisoned after failing to pay the amount within the stipulated two-week time frame. During her trial, Hill was ordered by the judge in Newark, New Jersey, to undergo counseling because of her conspiracy theories, including that artists are being oppressed by a plot involving the military and the media. Lauryn Hill pleaded guilty to charges of tax evasion last year. Her lawyer said she had paid more than $970,000 in an outstanding tax bill, which amounted more than $2 million. Hill vanished from public life to raise her five children by Rohan Marley, the son of acclaimed reggae singer Bob Marley, following the success of her album The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill way back now in 1998. Shortly before she was arrested last year, Hill penned a diatribe declaiming the music industry. In that rant, Hill blasted pop music for a, quote, climate of hostility, false entitlement, manipulation, racial prejudice, sexism, ageism, over-commercialization and its resulting restrictions and limitations can be very damaging and distorting to the inherent nature of the individual. James, I'll include the flashback to my own MediaMonarchy.com back in June of last year. Lauryn Hill's taxing problem, manipulated and controlled by a media-protected military-industrial complex. James.
I didn't really know that was in the realm of wild-eyed, crazy conspiracy theories, because I've heard a lot of artists talking about that exact same thing. Of course, usually when they start to age and mature and find that there's no room for them in the music industry that just wants to churn up and spit out old new talent every few months. But I mean, one of my favorite musicians, Billy Corgan, has talked about this at length many times. So we'll see if he gets sentenced for his conspiracy theorizing. But it's interesting. This is just, I think, another one of those cases that they love to trot out now and then, to where they can throw a high profile person in jail for tax evasion just to remind the peons their place in society. So we can think back to Wesley Snipes, who I believe recently got out of jail for his tax evasion practices, et cetera, et cetera. So the obvious moral to take from this story is that tax evasion is wrong and you'll go to jail unless you're the Treasury Secretary, a.k.a. Geithner, who, of course, got away with fudging his taxes back in the day and got little more than a slap on the wrist and became the Secretary of the Treasury. You know, no big problem there. But, of course, if you're a big-name talent, they want to throw you behind bars and make an example out of you. So this is exactly what's happening with Lauryn Hill, and it's disgusting, but it's exactly what we would expect.
And I can't help but find the comparisons between her situation and somewhat someone like Dave Chappelle, who essentially found himself like, oh my God, I don't want anything to do with this system whatsoever. I'm out. James, the other kind of interesting esoteric note that I really found today is you looked at the news and it was basically the sacrifice in some way, shape, or form of three women. Again, this is Western media today that you're subjected to. Hillary Clinton, Lauryn Hill, and Jodi Arias were these three women that were all sort of sacrificed in the media landscape today for all their various wrongdoings. Parallel to that, we also have, of course, the important human interest story of the three women and their salvation from this Ohio, you know, kidnapping camp. And, of course, you're already seeing, I've seen it happened this afternoon in Oregon, the copycat effect is already kicking in. So now, of course, it's, oh, my God, there's going to be it's a kidnapping epidemic. I found it just really interesting on an esoteric level. Perhaps it's a little bit of as above, so below. Having said all that, James, let's now move quickly to our third and final story as we are kind of crafting a bit of a media theme. And this is a story that we have reported on, but of course the hits just keep on coming. The CIA requested Zero Dark 30 rewrites. A newly declassified CIA document suggests members of the U.S. agency did help to shape the narrative of Zero Dark 30, Catherine Bigelow's recent film about the hunt for Osama. Several elements of the draft screenplay for Zero Dark 30 were changed for the final film upon CIA request. Jessica Chastain, the lead actress, and her character Maya, the film's main protagonist, was originally seen participating in an early waterboarding torture scene, but in the final film, she's only an observer. A scene in which a dog is used to interrogate a suspect was also excised from the shooting script. Finally, a segue in which agents party on a rooftop in Islamabad, drinking and shooting off an AK-47 in celebration, was also removed upon CIA insistence. This was agreed to despite the documented use of dogs in U.S. interrogations of terror suspects at Guantanamo Bay in the early days of Junior Bush, and despite some of the photographs from the later Abu Ghraib scandal featuring, of course, dogs menacing naked prisoners. The memo appears to confirm suspicions of a cozy relationship between the CIA and Mark Bull, with the agency confident it would be portrayed positively due to the level of help it had provided to the filmmakers. Quote, as an agency, we've been pretty forward-leaning with Bull, a CIA staff member wrote to colleagues in documents released last year. He's agreed to share scripts and details about the movie with us, so we're absolutely comfortable with what he will be showing. James, I'll also include the flashbacks again to MediaMonarchy.com, noting, of course, that the White House gave special access to the filmmakers. And what I found in my own research, James, and again, we've kind of talked about this, is that the same guys essentially involved in the constant curation of this Osama bin Laden myth go from the late 70s and Cyclone and all those dudes and Robert Gates and Zbigniew Brzezinski up until this present day, where some of those same folks are still involved in talking to Catherine Bigelow and talking to Mark Bull and keeping the constant, because like Bush Jr. said, you know, you got to keep repeating things to catapult the propaganda. Meanwhile, the truth, you just kind of have to drop it once.
Well, you're exactly right. This is something that we've talked about before, and I'm sure we'll talk about again, because every time it rears its ugly head, I think it deserves to be smacked down as the whack-a-mole that it is. It's just such a disturbing and disgusting practice in the supposedly land of the free, home of the brave, that the Central Intelligence Agency, whose very mandate for its existence is to operate in foreign theaters and not to operate at all on the American soil or to influence the American public, has an entertainment liaison officer that works specifically with Hollywood to develop and produce scripts that put the agency in the best possible light, which is, again, a complete 180 against what the mandate of the agency supposedly is. We all know it's not really about that anyway. It's about just putting out the CIA propaganda in the most effective way possible. And I suppose the only thing that's surprising about it in this day and age is that it's so above board and on the table. It's been there for half a century, at the very least, with the CIA and the news media, etc. But now they're pretty open about what they're doing. And probably the most disturbing part of all of this is how little the public seems to care about it. I know the listeners to New World Next Week, people who tune in every week, will undoubtedly be more on the ball on this issue, but it's important to keep in mind. I mean, I would suggest not giving your hard-earned dollars to Absolutely. Buy into this propaganda, but at the very least, even if you do, go in with your thinking cap and just realize that any big budget mainstream Hollywood flick is going to be influenced by the military industrial complex, the Pentagon, the CIA. They all have their fingers in these pies, and they're all trying to program your mind. And the only thing that I can say about that is your mind must be valuable if they're spending all this money to try to get at it. So the best thing you can possibly do is to refuse to let them into it. But at any rate, let's try to starve them of the money and the attention that they're so desperately seeking from us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's something our good friend Richard Grove has always talked about. Why would you continue to give money to people who have openly, documentably been lying to us? James, just quickly in closing, I want to send out huge congratulations to you and your new child. Nothing but love and best wishes. And my last media little joke or reference would be, I wish I could just reach over and give you a hug and pat on the back. But we, in fact, are in two different cities, James. You are in, of course, you're in Japan. I'm here in Oregon in the States. Unlike the CNN guys who are essentially busted acting like they were doing a satellite interview when, of course, they're all staked out outside the Ohio kidnapping house. So I wish I was really there and could just reach through and give you a hug, brother.
It would be nice, and I really do appreciate that, and I appreciate the literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of messages that I receive from all around the world. Truly, truly touching and very much appreciated by myself, my wife, and my son. So we really do appreciate that. And of course, I'm just getting my foot back into the waters here at the Corbett Report, so I'm coming in gradually. I'll probably have a podcast episode out next week, and we'll start picking up the steam here, but I'm just getting into the new routine. So once again, thank you all out there for your patience during this time, and thank you all for your congratulations. I really do appreciate it. So James, once again, thank you for the three stories this week, and I'm looking forward to doing it again next week.
All right, man. Thanks so much. Take care.
You too.